Thanks everybody for joining us here for our meeting, France, Rebirth of a Fighting Left. Our main speaker is Penny Duggan, a longstanding leader of the Fourth International and the Nouveau Parti Anticapitaliste. I'm sorry if I will botch continuously all the French pronunciation and English, but I'm happy to be here with you. And we will hear from Penny at the beginning of an outline of the developments of the current situation. This is a meeting we organized together from RISE in Ireland, from Lenin and Kampf in Germany, and the Reform and Revolution Caucus in DSA here in the US. My name is Stefan Kimmerer, use he, him pronouns. Whenever you speak, it would be great if you could also introduce yourself and let us a little bit know about you, where you're from. Here in Seattle, we will have a number of comments here, but some are a bit late, and some are calling in from a strike at the Starbucks roastery. Here, Starbucks International is located in Seattle. There's some unionizing effort, I'm sure all of you know, but Starbucks announced to close two of the shops who decided to unionize here. There's a protest here today. Makes it a bit more challenging for comrades to join us, but it's also exciting to see that. And everyone who misses this meeting, or if you think it's a fantastic meeting and you want to advertise it for us to watch, you all will find the video of this and the audio on our websites, for example, on reformandrevolution.org. And then you can see what's going on there. After the introduction from Penny, we will open it up for questions and for contributions. I think there are a lot of questions, so we would prioritize this at least at the beginning first, and I'm looking forward to hear all your questions and give Penny a chance to respond to that. We're also super happy. I heard this morning that Laurence Buffet from Ensemble, a revolutionary socialist group, an elected vice president of the Greater Lyon Urban Community is here, and we would give her an extra time in the discussion to also explain things and come in. That's great to have you here. So I introduced Penny as a longstanding Marxist leader. I'm excited to hear your assessment of the situation in France, and please take it away.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Stefan. Thank you for the invitation. I have to say that it's rather difficult conditions, not because there's a strike going on, but because we're having what they call an extreme weather situation in France right now, well, in most of Europe, and it's rather hot. Because for me, it's 6 o'clock in the evening, and it's still very hot. So I'll do my best. So I thought I would start just by outline, because as you all know, therefore we've just recently, since April, had presidential elections and then parliamentary elections in France. Maybe I should just say in passing, Stefan introduced me, but I am originally from Britain, but I have lived and been politically active in France for the last 40 years. So that's a bit about who I am. So I thought I would just start by explaining a little bit about the situation, because we all have different political systems in our countries, president, parliament, and so on, aren't all necessarily the same. So the French president is elected by a direct popular vote in a two-round system. So there can be many candidates in the first round. And indeed there are, I can't actually remember the number that there were this year, but then there is a runoff round between two candidates. And so this year, for the second time after 2017, the runoff was between Emmanuel Macron, who was first elected president in 2017 and was re-elected this year, and Marine Le Pen, who is the candidate of the far right, Rassemblement National, which used to be the Front National, the National Front. Several weeks after the presidential elections, there are the elections for the National Assembly, for the Parliament. Like the President, the National Assembly is elected for a mandate of 5 years. The whole Assembly is elected at once and comes up for re-election 5 years later. There's not any partial renewal, as there can be in some other systems. This particular configuration has been in place for the last 20 years and was brought in to ensure, in fact, that a newly elected president would have a big majority in the National Assembly, in the Parliament, because in the 1990s there were two periods of what we call cohabitation, in other words, where the president was of a different political position than the majority of the National Assembly. So the role of the French president is, the person is both head of state and head of the executive, names the prime minister. There is a prime minister, but it's the president who chairs the council of ministers, but it's the prime minister who speaks in parliament, represents the president. And the president is also the head of armed forces and has a determining role in questions of national security and foreign policy. So the fact that Emmanuel Macron lost his overall majority in the National Assembly, which he had enjoyed in his first five-year mandate, was quite a shock for the ruling class, and obviously is a big factor of instability and weakness. So how did this come about? First of all, to explain to a certain extent where Emmanuel Macron came from, he had in fact been a minister in the Socialist Party government before 2017, the economics minister. It might have been called a Socialist Party government, but it had strictly nothing of socialism and or left wing about it. And he was he introduced reforms in labor law and so on that were extremely, in fact, unpopular at that time. But he presented himself in the 2017 elections as being neither right nor left, above all that, different from all that. And in fact, he was elected in a big surge of, I guess, people believing him and that it would be something new, because both the traditional right wing and the traditional left wing had not really proved satisfactory for the mass of the population. So his movement, that at that time was called La République en Marche, where the Republic is marching, is going forward, was not a party, was not an organized political party. So many of the people who were elected to parliament had no political experience. Apparently there were stories that there were even some that didn't realize that meant they would actually have to go and participate in parliament. Some of them came from other political parties, both from the Socialist Party and or also from the right-wing parties. So it was a very heterogeneous, it wasn't a very homogenous grouping, and the main thing was therefore around Macron, who played a very centralizing role, and with all this idea that he was the Jupiterian president above everything, was the center. And of course there were two big crises, in fact, during his five-year mandate, which therefore took up nearly all of it. The first of all was the Yellow Jackets movement, the Gilets Jaunes, which started as a protest over the question of tax on fuel for cars, which hit in particular people who live in the rural areas and have to use their cars a lot, but the but it became much bigger than that, and it became generally a challenge of people who felt hard done by the way that this society is. It was very mixed politically, but overall the dynamic took it away from the efforts that there had been of the far right to play a role in it. And but it was an ongoing movement that for a couple of years was constantly in the streets and challenging the government. And then, of course, the other crisis that came along was the question of the pandemic. And so obviously all governments, you know, had a problem in dealing with that because of the way that health services and so on had been cut back. But then also in the latter part, the whole question of vaccination, the vaccination pass and so on also provoked big movements against the government policy. And so it was in that context that there was two things. There was, on the one hand, a big vote for the far right, which I will come on to, and also a big vote for a left bloc, which was constructed by Jean-Luc Mélenchon with his party, the Communist Party, and the Greens, which I will also explain. That was for the parliamentary elections after the presidential election, where all those left-wing parties actually had their own candidates and went separately. So the result that we saw in the parliamentary elections, therefore, was three blocs in parliament. So the bloc around Macron, the far right, and the left-wing bloc of the NUPES, the New Ecological, Social and Popular Union of Jean-Luc Mélenchon. We could also actually say that there is a fourth bloc, which is the abstentionists, because the rate of abstention in parliamentary elections is very high. It was 54%. It's presidential elections are the most, where there is the highest rate of participation, there the abstention was 28%. So the situation in these elections was was pretty polarized, with traditionally in France, there's what's called the Republican Front, where everybody says we can't possibly let the far right be elected, and therefore we should vote against them. This is what has enabled Macron, in fact, to win against Le Pen in the last two elections. And in 2002, Jacques Chirac of the right wing, also against the father of Marine Le Pen, Jean-Marie Le Pen. But on the other hand, so there were that element that plays out in the elections, but there were also the people who, anything but Macron. And so people, including who had voted Mélenchon, who had been a candidate in presidential elections, sometimes voted Le Pen to be against Macron in the legislative elections. On the other hand, there was a big push, including from some parts of the Macron bloc and the traditional right, to say anybody but the Mélenchonites. And so there was real polarization in the parliamentary elections, and including a big push from Macronites to say vote against, to say that there are two extremes, there's the Rassemblement National and there's the left wing, and you should vote against both of them. So first of all, to talk about the Rassemblement National, so it's true, it's a very big shock that they should have 90 members. I mean, there's 89 specifically of the party, but you can add a couple of others, so they've got about 90 in the National Assembly of something over 500. The only other time where they've really had a significant presence was in the one election in the mid-1980s, where there was proportional representation introduced by Mitterrand, President Mitterrand. When he saw what he did, it was quickly withdrawn. It only happened for one election. So I mean, this party has, first of all, I mean, just as an illustration, it's the only party to have representatives of every social economic category among its elected representatives. It's got farmers, it's got manual workers, it's got, you know, heads of bosses of big companies, it's got the whole range. So, but its base, when we look at the picture of the country where it is, a lot of its base is in industrial areas that are in decline in the north of France, in areas where jobs are very precarious, where there's limited social mobility, even if unemployment isn't necessarily very very high. And of course, it also plays the racist card, and therefore, in a certain region of southeast France, this is particularly important. I mean, there's obviously the whole discussion as to should we call it a fascist party, but it certainly plays on the theme of a racist Islamophobic ideology, with big chants in its meetings of people saying, "On est chez nous," that means, you know, this is ours, we're at home. In other words, a very excluding against migrants, racialized people, and so on. There's a lot of discussion as to the extent to which Marine Le Pen has made this party more to have a bigger conscience on social questions and to be more populist. And it's true, there's been demagogic support for the Yellow Jackets movement, demagogic support for the protests against the reform of the pensions, which has been an ongoing theme since Macron was in the Socialist Party government, but also it's one of his big projects that he intended, although he had to abandon it given the general upheavals during his first mandate. He says that he's going to continue it. But in actual fact, the Rassemblement National has been very focused on elections and doesn't really know how to build mobilizations and so on. Now, there are other groups of the far right that may be more capable of doing that. And so we'll have to see how that plays out. But at the moment, the Rassemblement National at a parliamentary level is playing the role of saying, we're the opposition because they are the single biggest bloc, and we're going to be a respectable parliamentary opposition. So the other big bloc in parliament, and the most interesting from our point of view, is therefore the NUPES, which as a whole, if we take all the parties together, has many more MPs. It has 142. This was initiated, as I said, by Jean-Luc Mélenchon after the presidential elections, in which, as I said, each party had their own candidates. Mélenchon himself, but the Communist Party, the Socialist Party, and other smaller left-wing parties, such as, for example, ourselves, the NPA. And it's true that Mélenchon, in the last period of the election campaign, a real dynamic began to build up that made it look as if it would be possible for him to actually be in the second round and to beat Marine Le Pen. It didn't in fact happen, but this was undoubtedly the case. And we know that although there was a lot of sympathy and the meetings of our presidential candidate of the NPA, of Philippe Poutou, were in general very big, very enthusiastic, with a lot of young people attracted by Poutou and his ideas, that a lot of them in fact voted for Mélenchon when it came to actual voting. But after the presidential election, Mélenchon did what it's a shame that in fact hadn't been done previously or even in previous elections, which was to propose to make this alliance for the parliamentary elections. And the original proposal was made to the Communist Party, to the Greens, Europe Ecologie Les Verts, EELV is actually their name, and ourselves, the NPA. And at that time, they said no question of having the Socialist Party. The Socialist Party is a social liberal party. It's discredited because of the way that it's been in government, the way it's managed capitalism. But unfortunately, after several weeks of the negotiations, they accepted to start to negotiate with the Socialist Party. All the negotiations were carried out by a series of bilateral meetings, not everybody together. And in that situation, we found that compromises were made with the Socialist Party politically that we didn't agree with. And also it left for us no space that would have enabled us, for example, to have somebody elected to parliament in terms of the constituencies that were proposed. So we were not, in the end, part of the national NUPES agreement. So the political platform is a radical political platform. It was built on the basis of discussions in working groups with radical reformists, intellectuals, trade unionists, researchers, activists, and so on. But that was the problem. It was constructed in that way more than with these intellectuals and academics and researchers, more than coming directly from the actual demands raised in struggles and so on. But nevertheless, on questions such as the pension reform, on the question of the minimum wage, and a whole series of questions, it is indeed. It's a very long program, 124 pages or something, and 650 proposals. But it is, it is a radical program. But the thrust of the election campaign was around Mélenchon prime minister. Mélenchon was not a candidate to be in parliament, but in the French system, you don't have to be an elected member of parliament to be a minister. And so again, it was a campaign, okay, to keep the electoral momentum of the presidential elections, but in our opinion, made too much continuity between that and the parliamentary elections. And with this concentration on an individual, repeating what in fact Mélenchon and we and most of the left are rightly critical of, which is the very personalized and concentrated on one person nature of the presidential elections. And it also led to positions such as when we proposed that there should be proposed a uniform increase in wages. Oh no, because this isn't something that the Prime Minister can do, which is actually, though not the point really, of how you wage an election campaign on the basis of the needs of the mass of the population, of the working classes. In actual fact, although for years Mélenchon has voted for a sixth republic, in other words, for a recasting of the French political system, the way that this campaign went, it actually tended to accept that more than we would have hoped. We also have to say, as far as we are concerned, but we know that many people actually inside Mélenchon's La France Insoumise or the broader Union Populaire, which was the force that supported him in the presidential campaign, is is not a party in the sense of having democratic structures. And it's very much organized around Mélenchon and a group around him and the elected parliamentarians. Now, this will obviously have to change, because one thing was when there were 17 of them, now that there are, I mean, from Mélenchon's grouping alone, there's around 80. It obviously can't work in the same way. And we know that comrades such as the Comrades of Ensemble, some of whom were originally in the NPA and left the NPA in 2012 to join what was then the Left Front, the Front de Gauche, with Mélenchon and the Communist Party and so on, agree with us on this criticism. And they indeed are constantly seeking ways in which they can have influence through a political force within the NUTs. So another element which could be problematic is the relationship of this grouping, the NUTs, to social movements. On the one hand, you have MPs who come from the social movements. For example, one of them, she was in global justice movements and so on. But others have a very long history in parties. I mean, Mélenchon himself was a minister in a socialist party government 20 years ago, and also with any elected force, there's obviously always the risk of adapting too much to the parliamentary institution, the parliamentary rhythm, the parliamentary way of doing things. And indeed, in the first week after the election, the talk was, what sort of parliamentary group? That the NUP should have one single parliamentary group and not as had been previously agreed, that each party would have its own and then have a coordinating intergroup to do things. The question of the election of the president of the Finance Commission, now this is the most important commission in the French Parliament, is always chaired by somebody from the opposition. And so the fight was, would somebody proposed by the NUPS be elected or somebody proposed by the Rassemblement National? And in fact, all the NUPS parties agreed on a candidate who was therefore elected against the candidate of the far right. And the other big discussion in that first week was the question of a confidence vote in the prime minister. Now Mélenchon has talked about having a march, a big demonstration in September against the high cost of living, which of course, as in every country, is a big concern in France with fuel costs and the shortages created, obviously, by the war in Ukraine and so on. But the immediate response from the leader of the biggest trade union confederation, the CGT, was to say, it's the job of the trade unions to organize such a march. It's not for a political party to call it. I mean, this is an ongoing question in France of how the trade unions and political parties work together, but it shows the problems that Mélenchon announces this sort of thing without discussing with even the trade unions that are friendly to him. So the question, I mean, the problem is, although Parliament is going on, is that in France, they tend to have an extended holiday period during the summer. And so we won't really see what is the possibility for real social mobilizations until after that. But for the moment, there are no big calls by the trade unions, although there are strikes in different sectors, for example, in hospitals, because, of course, the health service has been suffering a lot. Sorry, I've gone well over my time. So I just want to say a couple of things. So, as I said, the NPA was not officially part of the NUPES at a national level. But we were in some areas where, not where there was Socialist Party candidates of the NUPES in general, not where there were Green Party candidates, but if they were from France Insoumise or Communist Party. And so, for example, in my area, we were very active in the campaign as a recognized force of it, because for us, the local candidate, who's a very well-known local activist, already elected local councillor, fulfilled the criteria for us of being seen as somebody who was very clearly for a break with, you know, the policies, including of the last Socialist Party government, of what we call social liberalism, of supporting and deepening the struggles of the local population, whether as residents, whether as workers, and so on. We also took the initiative after the elections to have a public forum with two of the newly elected NUPES MPs, somebody from a collective of people of generally racialized background and from the probably what we call quartier populaire, maybe the closest for you would be to say something like the ghettos, but maybe that's too strong, but certainly from areas where the population is heavily racialized, generally very low income and with all those type of social economic problems. A collective that had wanted to be really integrated into the NUPES and hadn't found that it was sufficiently taken into account. So that was the start of a debate that we in particular want to continue promoting by inviting different forces to our own summer university, by ourselves answering invitation to others, because we think indeed that the basis for building a new fighting left is by increasing the level of discussion, exchange, collaboration between different left forces, but that there is not at this time the basis for saying, you know, we should just all be one big party, because there are too many questions outstanding of political positions, of questions of organization, and so on, to make that realistic. But we think that that's what we should be working to, and therefore we stand for using every possibility to push forward those sorts of discussions around those sorts of themes. I'll just quickly end by saying that, of course, there is a new scandal now that has come out to weaken Macron's position, which has been found, I don't know whether you've heard of the Uber files and everything that has been revealed about the extent to which he was actively aiding Uber to set themselves up here in France. I mean, it's obviously not only France, and it's a big because, of course, you know, there have been a lot of actions against the whole Uber platform, the whole gig economy type things about the way that workers are treated, that they're not treated as workers, therefore they don't have the advantages of employed workers, and so on. So this is the latest question here. There is another question that I think I should mention, even though I'm sorry, it does mean going over time, which is the political Me Too, because this has become a question here. First of all, there was a minister that Macron had named who has been accused of rape by several women. So finally, he had to step down or be stepped down. So that was one. On the other hand, the Minister of the Interior, against whom certain allegations are made, is still in place. So it's not very consistent. And then, unfortunately, the NUPES deputy, who was elected, president of the Finance Commission, has been accused of sexual harassment. And so this is certainly because I'm in the NUPES forums and so on at my local level, this is a big debate, because the reaction of some of the leaders of the NUPES has been to say, oh, it's just politically motivated, and the guy, you know, I know him, he's a nice guy, he wouldn't do that, and so on. Unfortunately, a sort of reaction that we are too used to, whereas there are others who are saying, no, we have to believe women when they make this sort of accusation, and therefore there has to be a proper inquiry. And indeed now, in fact, the woman in question has made an official complaint with the police, and so there is a police inquiry. But also the France Insoumise has taken it up through its own commission. I don't know how much of this is actually in the international press, but it does show to what extent these sorts of questions do unfortunately arise, and even in organizations that are supposed to stand for fighting against oppression, and that even in those organizations it's not always straightforward how they are dealt with. So that's something else that we will have to see how that evolves, that situation, because it would obviously be a big blow to NUPES if the deputy who was elected president would have to stand down or something of that nature. Sorry for going over time.
Thank you so much, Penny. And I think it's really important for us to hear the details then it is the interesting thing to deal with the nitty-gritty questions, right, of tactics and collaboration and how to work things out with all the differences that matter and all the struggle to also build a force of the working class where we can unite. So that was very helpful. I would expect that there are a lot of questions, and I would propose that we collect some questions. If you want to come in and ask a question at this point of time, if you just raise your hand, or if you put in the chat, Stack, whatever, then I can call on you. Then we can bring in Penny for answering some questions, other comments. Want to help us answering? I have RK.
Yeah. Should I go ahead?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Yes. Yes. Thanks. Actually, RK are just my initials. My name is Raghu. I'm actually here in Toronto, in Canada, but I did live for many years in France and was a member of the NPA and so forth. So thanks, Penny, for the presentation, and thanks to the organizers for putting this together. I just had two questions, one which is kind of narrow and one which is much broader. The narrow one is, I'm sure anyone who follows France on the radical left has probably encountered the bit of information that says that the NPA could have joined the NUPES and they could have been, quote unquote, awarded a couple of seats within the agreement. But my understanding is that actually is not the case, that neither Poutou nor Besancenot or any of them was offered any so-called winnable seat. And that all this was very hectic. I think Penny said if the negotiations took place over a number of weeks, but it was all very hectic and kind of chaotic and they had to meet a deadline. So maybe if Penny could just go into some detail of what happened more concretely in those, you know, those hectic, chaotic weeks of negotiation, or however long of negotiation that followed the presidential second round results. And the other question is related to that, but much broader. And that is, you sort of touched on this, Penny, near the end of your presentation, but I'm wondering with the NUPES, I mean, I think a lot of people on the radical left must be asking this question. I'm just guessing, really. But with the NUPES success and, you know, this breakthrough and all the excitement and even euphoria that surrounded it, I'm curious to know, you know, what's being said in the NPA itself. I mean, again, people who've been following this over the past 10, 15 years know that there was almost like a race was underway for in that period in the late 2000s and early 2010s, where, you know, the NPA very much had the wind in its sails, not only because of its very popular spokesperson and presidential candidate, Olivier Besancenot, the postal worker, but just because there was a time when it seemed to be the only viable, credible left opposition to at the time Sarkozy was in power. And there just seemed to be this, what people called the desert, le désert, between Sarkozy on the one hand and traditional left totally in disarray and discredited, and the NPA and the NPA project, which was really very popular and had a lot of wind in its sails in its early days. And it's easy to forget that at one point, Besancenot was a more popular figure than Mélenchon. I mean, it's easy to forget that now. But right. So, but what does this mean for the NPA project? I know it's a kind of a tough question. What does it mean for the NPA project, which has been in a kind of, you know, its own disarray in recent years? And, you know, what prospects do you see, Penny, for what debates are underway and what are the prospects for those who still, I mean, such as myself, I still believe, quote unquote, in the original NPA project back from the, you know, the late 2000s and early 2010s. You know, where should people like me situate ourselves in relation to these new developments? And thanks again.
Thanks a lot. Are there other questions? Should we bring together more questions? If not, I would just directly hand it back to Penny, as it was a very wide-ranging question.
Sure. Well, on the first question about the negotiations, I won't go into a blow-by-blow account and the having to have two meetings in one day in order. But as I said, the proposal was originally made to the NPA, the Communist Party, and the Greens. And so the discussions started, the La France Insoumise or the Union Populaire with each of these organizations separately. They were never all around the table at the same time. But they were progressing, and it did seem that it would be possible. But then the Socialist Party that La France Insoumise had said very clearly that there was no question of them being in these negotiations, asked to be part of it, were accepted, and then there was, there were political compromises, for example, on how you pose the question of the European Union or other key questions, the pension reform, minimum wage, and so on, which were difficult for us, but also the original agreement had been that the number of constituencies proposed to each party would be proportional to the election results in the presidential campaign. But in fact, the Socialist Party was offered a lot more. I mean, the Socialist Party got 1.7% in the presidential elections. I can't remember today the number of seats. And yes, there was no proposal of a constituency that would be winnable for a NUPES candidate proposed to the NPA. And in particular, there was not a constituency proposed for Philippe Poutou, who is actually the second most popular political figure in France on the left, in his region. And you see, we don't agree. It's another point of disagreement with La France Insoumise. We don't agree with parachuting candidates, you know, in somewhere that they have no relation to. They do it. You know, Mélenchon used to be elected in Marseille. He doesn't live in Marseille, never has lived in Marseille, and so on. And that's not something that we would do. So yes, in the end, we didn't join the NUPES because we didn't consider that the conditions were respectful of us and of what the NPA represents. Yes, when the NPA was founded in 2009, as Raghu said, because he was living here then, I mean, it was a very successful project. At our founding conference, we had 10,000 members, 10,000 people had party cards, and so on. And what happened, one of the things that happened, of course, was that Mélenchon formed, first of all, the Parti de Gauche, which was a split from the Socialist Party. And then in the next few years, formed the Front de Gauche, the Left Front, with the Communist Party. And it was at that point when that was formed that a certain number of comrades from the NPA thought that the sort of project that we had with the NPA, which was to build an open anti-capitalist party that was welcoming of people of different political traditions on the basis of the agreement of being anti-capitalist, would be better done within that context. And it was in that context that the comrades, but there are undoubtedly people in the audience, because I think I've seen one or two who could explain this from the inside, but that they created Ensemble with the idea that it would be a third pole in the Left Front. The thing is that the Left Front then collapsed. It is no longer a front, and the Communist Party, continues to lead its separate life. Although, I mean, it was in the NUPES, but there hasn't been an ongoing organization of the Left Front. Also, if we remember the end of, the late 2000, 2008, 2009, it was also financial crisis. I mean, it was a difficult period for the left. And then in France, we had the European elections. And whereas the impetus for the NPA had been very largely around the very successful election campaigns of Olivier Besancenot, the first electoral test that we had, which was the Europeans, was not successful, and so that was also a problem for the development of the NPA. But there are contributions that you can find on our site, International Viewpoint, where people have gone into more detail about the balance sheet of the NPA. And the project of an open party welcoming different political currents also had its problems, because in fact there were currents who came into it who were not interested in building honestly and loyally together a party, but actually were there because they wanted to build their own current. So there was also that problem. And so it's true that the NPA project has not been successful as we thought it could be when we launched it. But we think that that overall idea remains what we should do. And so that's what I was saying about the way that we intend to continue to be actively promoting discussion and collaboration on the anti-social liberal left, the radical left. We couldn't necessarily, you know, call all of La France Insoumise or anything the anti-capitalist left, but the anti-social liberal left.
Thank you, Penny. We have a question on the chat from Whitney. And Whitney says, here in Seattle in the US, you are running a Democratic Socialist for Congress against the head of the Armed Services Committee. Our candidate is a strong anti-imperialist, which is hard to do in the current context of the war in Ukraine, which has reframed and legitimized military spending in many people's minds for the biggest time since 2001. What effect, if any, has been the effect of the Russian war in Ukraine had on different political parties, foreign policy, military spending, stance on NATO, etc.? And then we've got Dara and Dara and Alex, François, with some questions, and then I would hand it over to Laurence. I hope I say this somehow in French, who could also explain a little more for us. So, Dara. Yes, please go ahead.
Okay, great. I just have a very quick question. I was just wondering, given the history of the French Socialist Party, what is the attitude of working class people to it and its inclusion in NUPES? And, you know, has this been reformed in any sense? Like, it does remind me very closely of the Irish Labour Party, who, although it had posed itself as left in the past, is still disdained by large sections of the working class. And any, like, favorable relations from socialist forces to this party would be met with like kind of outrage. So I was wondering if that is the same case. I was also going to ask about the internal structure of the NPA, but I think you touched on it there in terms of the different tendencies. We have a similar setup in PBP, People Before Profit in Ireland, where we have three different tendencies operating at the moment, but it's still unclear like what it takes to form a tendency, what's the prospects for future tendencies forming, or if that is the direction that is desirable for the organization. But yeah, I'll leave it there. Thanks a million to everyone for joining us.
Thank you, Alex. Alex F.
All right, hi. Hi, everybody. My name is Alex, he, they pronouns, a member of the Young Democratic Socialists of America at Florida International University in Miami, and a member of Reform and Revolution Caucus. Yes, so my question was about how in this recent French legislative election, in addition to the success of NUPES, there was also the sometimes the story that somewhat overshadowed it, which was the surprising emergence of the French far right through, you know, Marine Le Pen's party. Being able to get, as you said, about 90 seats in the legislature. You know, this was notable because typically the runoff system has been effective in kind of locking out these extremist candidates. And in this case now, you know, the Marines, Le Pen's party was able to beat in runoff elections with a solid majority, both Macron's candidates and also the candidates of NUPES in some cases. Similarly, here in the United States, of course, we are also seeing, I would say, something of a resurgence or at least a boon to the right in the form of the reactionary decisions by our Supreme Court, the overturning of Roe v. Wade, the strong attacks against, you know, the rights of trans people and LGBT people in general. And I was just curious to kind of get your opinions on and your analysis of what some of the animating issues of the far right in France have been. You know, like what has been some of their appeal? In our case, it has been a lot of attacking the failures of our neoliberal Biden administration, of trying to hit on these cultural issues of abortion and trans rights. I want to know what some of the things that are animating people in France are. And also, I wanted to hear your evaluation of how effective NUPES and the French left in general has been in combating this new strain, and what strategies or approach you think is necessary to effectively defeat or at least combat this resurgent right in France. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And now if you have another question, or if you just want to come in with a contribution, please raise your hand or write stack into the stack, into the chat, and let me know. So Laurence, please, it would be great to hear from you a little bit more of the background.
Thank you for inviting me. Please don't hesitate to interrupt me because my English is very bad. And Penny, if you might help me or okay. Please, because I'm not sure I will be using the right vocabulary. Sorry for that. I am a member of Ensemble. Ensemble is a movement for left-wing ecological and in solidarity-based alternative. That's its name. And I am vice president of the Metropolis of Lyon, which is the urban community that includes 59 cities. Lyon City is one of them. And I am responsible for the executive of the urban community for citizen participation and citizen initiatives. Another word would be a direct democracy, if you understand that. And also I am a councillor of the first district of the city of Lyon. There is 9 districts in Lyon. And I was elected with parties of the radical left and non-affiliated citizens, including France Insoumise, but also Ensemble, my movement. And we scored enough to be in the second round of elections with the Greens in 2020. And we won as well both the city of Lyon and the urban community. And it was for the urban community a bit unexpected. And being in the executive of this community was also quite of a surprise. But Bruno Bernard, the president, who is an ecologist, preferred to have me as a member of Ensemble be more than a purely France Insoumise member. What can I do? Penelope explained very well the situation of France, and I agree with quite everything. The three things important, that is the result of legislative elections and the huge disavowal of Macronism and the loss of the absolute majority for him and the defeat as well of certain members of its party. Number of leaders have been defeated as well. And this is an important situation. And I think it's because of the policy, it's an evidence, but also because of the political construction of the Macronism, not in the territories, and it couldn't work at the moment. And the second thing is the result of the legislative election also marks the strength of the extreme right, the far right. It was the case in the presidential election and in the first round of this election, but it's its best result in the legislative elections. And it goes well beyond its traditional regions. And this is a little difference with what you explained, Penny. I think it is also a good historic score in other region than the north and the south that is traditionally it's the region of the far right. And so these facts impose us to relaunch the anti-fascist fight. And and the especially the cultural and ideological battles in the media, for instance. And the third thing is the importance of abstention. We talked about that. And the thing is that the presidentialization of France is that they go to for voting for the presidential election. And then for the others, it's really difficult. Even the local now elections, we have a perpetual increase of abstention. So that is a problem. And we cannot ignore more the institutional crisis. So the NUPES also changing the whole situation in the left and ecology. That's a fact as well. So it's really important because there is a strong aspiration to unity or unitary things. And this is important that the NUPES exist, even if the NUPES is constructed by the head of the things and by the head of the parties. This is a problem, but this is a hope as well. That's because the situation is very complicated and very important. And the major clarification on the left situation is that is now paralyzed by, even if it's not completely great, it's paralyzed by an anti-liberal and anti-liberal orientation. And it's not the same thing as before, like we had with the situation with Mitterrand and also other left front we had before. So this is important as well. So now what can we do? For Ensemble, it's the fact that the Socialist Party is in is not a condition now for break everything. And we asked to participate in the activities of the NUPES and its parliament. In the NUPES, you have a parliament with searchers, political members, as well as trade unionism a representant and it's really important to try to convince that the NUP can go on. And also the NUP is really fragile because it's not contracted now in the local as local movement or in local movements. So we need to construct everything, in fact. And not and there is I am in the France Insoumise as well, but as Penelope explained very well the situation, it's not a democratic movement, it's really a problem, and we have many things to do. And I prefer work with the Greens actually, because it's better in the construction, the democratic construction, even if I have many political problems with them, but it's normal ways. And in France Insoumise, it's not the case. So we have many things to do to make the NUPES work, in fact. And so we try to do things with that, and especially in local organization, regional organization, and other strategic issues better than now. And just now with the parliament, it's not enough to deal only with the parliament now, and as well as the crisis increase. So we are working with the agenda with the purchasing power law and many things like this. And we're working with trade unionism, in particular with social security of food, and against what the government proposed, that is food voucher or things like this. And we work also with the project with pensions, but also free access to basic public services. And this, we can work locally with this, especially in Lyon, with water and energy, for instance, or maybe transport, public transport. We are working for co-construction of public services with the users and many things like this. So, well, that's examples to build NUPS and build the left opposition and ecologists as well, important and working this. I'm really sorry for my English. Another thing that is important is that we have differences with the international positions, with France Insoumise and for me with Mélenchon, really long time ago. And for this, I am nearer from the NPA than other movements, for instance. We can have as well the far part of the Greens as well. We are close with them in the international positions. So we are trying to work with it because for the rest of the France Insoumise, it's a bit of catastrophe on the international point of view. So the nuclear position, the position for Ukraine, the position of the global maritime domain and the non-alignment, what kind of non-alignment we have, and many things like this. So it's really, there is many things positive. It's really important. For instance, and many fears as well with the far right things. For instance, in Lyon, we have the executive, there is the Greens, the Socialist Party, Ensemble, and the France Insoumise, and the Communists. So all the left and ecologist part. And now the right, all the rights opposition, all the opposition of the right in Lyon, we don't have any far right members. We don't have far right councillors, for instance, but all the right calls us now the far left. The far left and the extreme far left. So I told to my comrades in the executive, welcome in the far left with me. I was the only member, and now you all are. So do the job now, because you don't have the choice. And that is a kind of a joke, and as well really important, because to trying to answer to the question before, all the Republican Front, all the things that we don't use far left vocabulary, that is now possible, and that's really a problem. To call them as radical as we are, maybe as me, but call all the opposition of ecologists, socialists, and us the far left, and not in a good way, it's a problem. Mm-hmm. So maybe I just won't tell anything left, but Penny, if you can come, if you can help me, that's very hard for me to speak in English.
No. It was very good.
Thank you. We've got Dania next, and if you want to get unstuck, please let me know. Raise your hand, put it in the chat.
Yeah, my name is Daniel Beruzzi. I'm from Darmstadt in Germany with Lernen im Kampf. And to be honest, from the outside, it's quite hard to understand why the radical, or why the left and the radical left in France doesn't go together. I mean, all these is the debate for years, and when you see, okay, there's different left organizations and everyone at the presidential election putting up their own candidate, including the NPA, as I heard. It's really hard to understand from the outside. Obviously, when you're in it, I understand that there's a lot of reasons what you talked about, the NUPS, that they didn't offer any candidate, any positions for you, and watering down demands of the way it's not democratically run and so on. But nevertheless, or let it put it into a question. What's the perspectives now? I mean, leave aside what's happened, but what's the perspectives now? Can, as I understand, the parliamentary election with the NUPS success is quite an opening, or as you said, Lawrence, a hope. That what can, is there perspectives, or what do you see the perspective of it developing a really broad, new broad left formation in the sense of, okay, you said it's not a party, but how can it develop into a party with structures, democratic structures, involvements, turn to the with connections to the social or orientation to social movements, to trade unions and so on. I mean, that would be the necessity, not just in France, but also in other many other countries, to have such a formation where different trends could debate and struggle and so on. So maybe what do you see? Is there the perspectives or the opening? Is it possible that something will come out of that like this? And what's the role of the revolutionary left in that? Is it not to be part of it, putting forward positions, fighting for democracy, fighting for connection to social movement and trade unions and so on? Maybe, but that's also a broad question, I guess.
Thanks a lot, Daniel. I could add a little bit on some more questions here. It looks for me from the outside that on the one side, including the so-called Socialist Party, Parti Socialist in NUPS, it has a big downside for those workers who are, and young people who are absolutely alienated by the neoliberal politics that the Parti Socialist put in place in the government. Their influence was super undermined. I think Penny mentioned that they got less than 2%, if I recall this correctly, in the presidential election. But my question would still be, I mean, a lot of people who would have voted for the Parti Socialist in the presidential election, they voted for Mélenchon because he was the uniting candidate and he had a chance to beat the far right for the second place, whatever. The Parti Socialist, it looks to me, they still have deeper roots in the trade union movement, in the communities. Is it with all the downsides that we've got to be aware of, it's also an advantage to have them in NUPS, however you say that. I understand that the program of NUPS rejected the neoliberal attacks of the Parti Socialist explicitly. And it had in other occasions, he had, okay, we disagree on this, this, and this. But I understood it was on the basis of rejecting the neoliberal attacks. And my son just needs attention right now. one second, William, I'll be with you. So isn't it also an advantage to try to break these people? Just looking from a German perspective, despite the fact that the Linke, the left party, exists for 15 years, it looks to me you have still the task to break people away from social democracy. In Britain, we saw the Corbyn phenomenon. It's ups and downs. Is it an advantage to try to reach into this territory? And if they are overrepresented in seats or whatever, how big of a problem is that? It's an honest question. I don't know the balance on the ground. The second question, if shorter, I understand if someone gets active in NUPS, they can put up a table, they can put up posters or whatever, but they can't join any democratic meeting, right? And the same applies to the France Insoumise, whatever. Is it correct that there's not a real offer? If someone wants to get involved, play a role, is not yet ready to join a small revolutionary socialist group or even a bigger revolutionary socialist group, no offense. There's no space for a broader democratic debate in any organizations. That's the challenge that I see there in moving forward. How would you describe this? That's it. And I have no one on stack, so maybe this is a chance. If Penny, if you would want to come back, and then Laura.
Yes, isn't there somebody, did Alex, who's in, yes, already spoke, sorry. Yes, Laurence made a very important point that, which is indeed the question of ongoing organization of NUPES. So there is the NUPES Parliament at the national level, and in the context of what I explained as the NPA's perspective, we would like to be able to participate as observers or something in that. But then very importantly, as you said, Laurence, is the question of organization at a local level. And this seems to be getting underway, but in a rather uneven fashion. I mean, where I am in the 20th arrondissement of Paris, so we have, you know, we have around us the four NUPES MPs who were elected straight out first round in the Daniel Obono, Sarah Legrand, Alex Corbière, and Eric Coquerel. And I'll say something specifically about this, so about the 20th in a minute, because it raises the question of the Socialist Party. But so in these different arrondissements, it's how this is working out, the question of having either local parliaments or local general assemblies, it seems to be quite differentiated. And that's one of the problems, that it relies very much on what actually the local deputy decides to do in terms of, you know, saying that we should start having now general assemblies or wait until September and things like that. But that is obviously what we as the NPA, where we've been in the NUPES campaigns, are advocating that precisely this, there should be this sort of ongoing organization, and as Laurent said, to take up the struggles. I mean, the big question here, where I am in the east of Paris, is the question of housing, and an enormous amount of work has already been done by Daniel Simonet, who's our deputy and has been, as I said, an elected councillor for 20 years, done a lot of work around that. And also, it's true, I forgot to say it, about Macron's grouping, which has changed its name actually and has now stolen the name Ensemble. is that they don't have that sort of local implantation that it's true that the Socialist Party still does. I mean, the woman who was the presidential candidate and only got 1.7% for the Socialist Party is, on the other hand, the elected mayor of Paris. I mean, why she bothered to stand in the presidential election to get this awful result is something that I will never understand. But I guess when people are driven by electoralist logics, we don't understand them. And so it's true that the SP has that, and I imagine that, yes, that would have had an effect with a view to forthcoming elections, to have an alliance with the Socialist Party, because it was striking in the regional elections and even the local elections that we had, that not that long ago, during the pandemic, I'm a bit lost for time, that the traditional right-wing party and the Socialist Party still, you know, represent something, whereas at the level of national politics and presidential campaigns and so on, they don't. So that is a real factor. On the other hand, it's true that the current Olivier Faure, what is he, the secretary, or anyway, the leader of the Socialist Party, yes, I mean, he very clearly said that they rejected what had been put forward under the Hollande government when Macron was Minister of the Economy and so on, in terms of labour legislation. So there is a break at that level. On the other hand, in my constituency, the Socialist Party stood against NUPES. So we actually and was supported in doing so by the whole of the Paris Federation of the Socialist Party. So it's... and then we had Jeremy Corbyn come to support us. And so then we had all the accusations of anti-Semitism and so on that unfortunately follow dog Jeremy Corbyn, you know, whatever he does. So the Socialist Party, it's a bit... we'll have to, I mean, it's another thing. We're going to have to see how it evolves. But it's true that Olivier Faure, who is the, I can't remember whether it's the general secretary, has been clearly nuked and made speeches clearly breaking, you know, and took, I mean, he won the majority to be in the nukes, to be in the nukes agreement. Although in the National Council of the Socialist Party, some of the, what they call, you know, the elephants, the old men who've been leaders for a long time were against it, and indeed some of them actually left the Socialist Party because of that. I mean, as to what the role of the revolution, I mean, it's, you know, everything that was said, it is an opening up. Obviously, it's a tremendous new space for the left. And you know, and it's true that to participate, you know, as I did actively in a local nukes campaign, and you know, to be giving out leaflets and so on with, you know, this enormous recognition and identification with Mélenchon, with you know, and with our candidate, as I said, she's very well known locally, and so on. You know, it was, it's true. It's very, you know, it makes you very enthusiastic. The NUBS result was actually not as good as we hoped it would be. I can't remember, because there were projections of getting 180 or something seats, and you know, it fell short of that. So, I mean, the role of the revolutionary left is to do all that it can, obviously, to develop and to deepen this dynamic, and introducing, indeed, democratic structures so that first of all, you know, we, but also, you know, everybody can have some influence on how that develops. So the difference we have, I mean, we had a meeting between a delegation of the NPA and a delegation of Ensemble Insoumis, you know, the other day, is that there are comrades who think it, one has to be totally in the NUPES or the Union Populaire or La France Insoumise. The problem is it's a bit Russian dolls, you know, one inside the other, to do that. And we think that, you know, we want to continue to have an independent presence outside because, as Laurent said, particularly, for example, on international questions, there is a lot to be done that can't be done. I was asked in a similar talk I did, you know, what impacted the whole question of the, well, it was asked here as well in writing, I forgot, the war in Ukraine have on the election campaign. Well, Macron used it to do photo shoots, photo opportunities. I mean, you know, just before the vote, he went off to be photographed, you know, alongside Zelensky. But unfortunately, yes, I mean, there are some very problematic historical positions in any case of Mélenchon in relation to Putin, to Russia, you know, a sort of campist position that enabled, you know, part of the whole demonization of these two extremes and so on was to say that, you know, whether it's the extreme right or the extreme left, they're friends of Putin. And of course, that's not something that is a vote winner at the moment. And then, of course, you have the CP, which is campist. I mean, you know, so we've had, I mean, there was one demonstration here in Paris anyway, where you had the CP you know, having a demonstration for peace, whereas the Ukrainians and the people supporting and in solidarity with the Ukrainian resistance were having another demonstration, you know, because what they wanted to say about supporting the Ukrainian resistance couldn't be said in the framework of the CP led, you know, the Mouvement pour la Paix, which is a sort of CP front organization, couldn't be said in that demonstration. Yes, opportunities, but also difficulties, and we have to work out, you know, and of course we want to collaborate as closely as possible, you know, where we agree. And you've seen that we and the Comrades of Ensemble, we do agree on a lot. I mean, you know, I agree with you, obviously, the Rassemblement National isn't just, I mentioned the North and that, but of course, now it's all down the East, in fact. I mean, there's a whole kind of band of where the Front National is strong. So it, yeah. So it's really a question of what to do and how to do, how best to do it. That is the discussion that we have to have.
I mean, and to add a few things, that's a strong question. And why the NUPS is important by now, and maybe in a few months it won't be anymore, I don't know. It's just something we must, if we want it to work, we want it, it must be now or never, something like this. And because of a crisis to come, this is right now that we will know what, on what basis it could work. And of course, both France Insoumise on one hand and the Greens on the other hand want to lead this, but they won't be able to do it easily. So it is also a chance maybe to build something different. That's my hope, maybe. But we have this debate on local things in Lyon, and many people as well say no, it's built by the national parties and it won't work at the end. But I don't know. I say just it's important to try just this. As well for me, and in Ensemble, we are divided in two parts. That's for very, very difficult positions. And I am in the group that thinks that the good area, the good zone to work is the NUPS, and not only the France Insoumise or the Union, the Popular Union of Mélenchon. Because we have too many problems with Mélenchon, as well as with former socialists, as he is. And with socialists, it's complicated as well. I work with them, new leaders of the Parti Socialiste in Lyon, and they are smaller enough to be now interesting, I think. And the left part of the Parti Socialiste is gonna win the lead, and they maybe, but it's quite the chance now. And at the end of the year, they have a congress. I don't know if it's the right term, mm-hmm. And as well as the Greens. So we'll see then what tendencies will win in these two organizations, and the debates are really, really rough. But I think now that in the Parti Socialiste, the elephants and all of them, and we have in Lyon as well, are in a minority now. So that's good, maybe, I don't know, but it's hoping as well. And for the finance, question. I'll give my point of view. My personal point of view is it's a problem in France as well, especially for the legislative elections. there is only two elections that permits the finance of parties, the legislative one and the European one. And the legislative one, when you have candidates for presidents and for legislative, you have money. That doesn't help coalitions. As well as in France, we don't know how to do coalitions. We don't know really well how to do that. So both of the things make that we have all candidates.
Maybe we should just explain, because people wouldn't have understood that.
Can you develop? It's not easy for me in English.
But I'm not sure I've got that I have all the details. But in France, there is some state funding of election campaigns, or state funding if you of so much per vote. If you get
if you have enough candidates in all the country, I think for the legislative you must have candidates in 30 different departments. I think if you have, you can have money from the state, and in plus you have money by vote.
For the whole period of the mandate, you get so much per vote that you got, and so Lawrence is absolutely right. I thought about saying it, but it was a bit complicated to explain. For example, for the presidential elections, you have to do this thing about getting 500 signatures from local mayors. We have many, many, many mayors in France, because even very small communes of, you know, sometimes less than 100 inhabitants, they have a mayor who can. But if you get that, then a part of your election expenses are paid, and they're paid at a certain tariff. And so if you have your own print shop, what you get reimbursed is perhaps less than you've spent. And therefore, it's a way of financing political parties.
And it's a way of financing left parties as well, because you know that we don't have many donators or stuff like this in the left. So it's a good way to finance things. So it doesn't help. And because we have two rounds most of the times in elections.
There are some very base material reasons for the problem of coalitions, as well as obviously questions of, you know, to what extent political identity, to what extent you want to fight on your own program. For example, I mean, you know, the Communist Party, you know, has a very strong identity, you know, feeling, and a lot of Communist Party members are really quite reticent about being in the NUPES or other coalitions, and we see that locally by which ones actually participate and which ones don't. But I mean, they're not the only party where that's the case, but. Yep, complicated.
It's complicated in a democratic way. It must be questioned, because people doesn't understand as well as you don't. It's normal. They don't understand why there is so many candidates. And it's finally a problem, I think, if I don't just think about me and my movement. Maybe it must be questioned, as well as the... what kind of election can finance parties? And this is as well a problem, to have good candidates or good coalition for parliament.
Thank you so much for all the explanation. I've got no one on stack, and I would propose if we could also wrap this up here. sure there will be more questions. Penny, do you want to say some final words? Anything left open?
I don't think so. I think that between us, Lawrence and I have, I think we've really...
You've covered a lot and explained.
I think so. I mean, one could perhaps discuss more what you asked about the Socialist Party, because, I mean, I wouldn't... Well, when you think of the trade unions, actually, the Socialist Party is not really the main political force that you think of, you know, as allied with the trade unions. It's the Communist Party, obviously, first and foremost, but also in the other most active trade union at a national level, which is Solidaire. That's very much more heterogeneous, with more people from the far left or the radical left, you know, so including France Insoumise. I think that the days when you could consider that the CFDT, which is, you know, very little active in a sort of militant way, and that it was the trade union expression of the Socialist Party, that's really a long time ago.
I agree.
Thanks a lot. Then, it was really very helpful to get a lot of things explained. Thanks a lot, Laurence. Thanks a lot, Penny, for taking all the time and being here with us. Penny mentioned that you can find more on internationalviewpoint.org. And this meeting was organized by one of the groups, RISE. RISE is a network in the People Before Profits Eco-Socialist Party in Ireland. Lernen im Kampf with the website lernenimkampf.de in Germany, and Reform and Revolution website reformandrevolution.org, and that's where you also will find the audio and video if you want to recommend, like and promote what you've heard here today and encourage more discussion about that. Thanks again for everyone who was here, came in with questions. And I hope we are all encouraged to continue the discussions about Marxist ideas, revolutionary socialist ideas on an international level. And that's what we aim to continue. That's it for today. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for the invitation. And it's nice to meet you, Laurence. I hope we'll meet in person one of these days.
Yes, I hope so. Thank you very much for everybody.
Okay, yes, thank you.